Live from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Today, President Donald Trump signed into law a massive public lands bill sponsored by Senator Lisa Murkowski. The bill designates more than 1 million acres in western states as wilderness, the highest level of federal protection. It creates new national monuments and provides better access to public lands for hunters and fishermen nationwide. The bill was a rare bipartisan creation that had interest groups on the right and left applauding its passage. In Alaska, the bill gives Alaska Native veterans of the Vietnam War era another chance to apply for 160-acre allotments, reopening a program that ended in 1971. The bill was a conglomeration of dozens of bills, many solving local problems for communities that border federal lands. The Oval Office signing ceremony was closed to the press. Murkowski, Senator Dan Sullivan, and Congressman Don Young attended. Juneau area residents will likely continue paying more than usual for electricity rates because of low water levels. The Juneau Empire reports dry conditions in southeast Alaska over the last year have caused the Alaska Electric Light and Power Company to temporarily increase rates. The utility's main source of power is the Stenisham Hydroelectric Project. The utility offsets power costs for customers by selling surplus energy to so-called interruptible customers, those with multiple heating systems. The utility says it doesn't have the usual surplus energy, so it has disconnected power to the interruptible customers. Utility says Stenisham has received about 79 inches of rainfall from October through February instead of the typical 90 inches. The State Division of Alaska Libraries, Archives, and Museums announced late last week that it's looking to sell the Sheldon Jackson Museum. That's after Governor Mike Dunleavy ordered state agencies to dispose of underutilized properties in an effort to reduce state spending. KCAW's Enrique Perez de la Rosa reports.
Sitka Senator Bert Stedman has one word for the governor's plan to sell the state-owned Sheldon Jackson Museum. Crazy. In total, the state owns over 1,800 structures with a booked property value of about $7 billion, according to the administration. Selling non-essential properties could mean savings in utility and upkeep costs. The Sheldon Jackson Museum was established in Sitka in 1895 by Presbyterian missionary Sheldon Jackson, who had traveled the Alaska Territory as the general agent of education. It is the oldest museum collection of indigenous culture in the state. It was placed on the National Historic Register in 1972 and later acquired and merged with the Alaska State Museum. In a press conference, Senator Bert Stedman said he is not interested in selling any state museums. He says the artifacts kept by the Sheldon Jackson Museum are invaluable.
History of Alaska is extremely rich, and we need to preserve that for future Alaskans and hand it down to our children and the children's children, not, liquidate stuff.
Stedman is the chair of the Senate Finance Committee and represents Sitka, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell, and many village communities. Although the future of the artifacts housed in the museum is unclear, he told reporters he assumed sale of the museum would include the artifacts inside.
There is no way we are selling our state artifacts and our museums. We're just not, this is crazy. That's just crazy stuff. We can fix our budget problems with the Marine Highways one, education, HASS, all this other stuff, and still keep our society intact.
In addition to selling the Sheldon Jackson Museum, the state is listing the former Stratton Library located next door. Already this year, Senator Stedman has expressed opposition to the proposed sale of the Mount Edgecombe High School Aquatic Center. The $26 million pool facility has not yet opened to the public, but is already being utilized by students of the state-run school. In an interview with KCAW in February, he said, quote, "They can sell the pool with me in it when they sell the governor's mansion with him in it." Reporting in Sitka, I'm Enrique Perez de la Rosa.
The Homer City Council has penned a strongly worded letter to Governor Michael Dunleavy, asking him to explore possible revenue options such as a state income tax instead of balancing the state's budget through reduced state services. The letter says the far-reaching cuts in Dunleavy's budget proposal reflect, quote, "little concern for the burden that you have passed on to the residents of Alaska and the local governments that serve them," end quote. Council members are asking the governor to support the restructuring of oil and gas tax credits, arguing that Alaskans subsidize gas and oil exploration. Council also voiced support for reducing state residents' permanent fund dividends to pay for state government services. Three men were rescued from an ice floe that broke loose from shore ice outside of Nome. Alaska State Troopers say 43-year-old John Culp Jr., 33-year-old James Gibson, and 45-year-old Philip Rode were plucked off the ice by helicopter. Their hometowns were not immediately available. Troopers, just before 6:30 p.m., took a call of the men on the floe. The ice broke off the main ice shelf along a beach and drifted slowly into the Bering Sea. Nome Search and Rescue at the time was responding to a person injured on a snow machine, but coordinated the rescue of the men on the ice. No one was injured. A Kodiak City councilman is free on bail after he was charged last week with six counts of felony assault, including assault with a weapon. Kodiak Daily Mirror reports 31-year-old Randall Bishop also is charged with seven misdemeanor assault counts. Charging documents were not immediately available. Online court documents do not list Bishop's attorney. Bishop did not immediately respond Monday to an email request for comment. According to the city website, Bishop won a three-year term to the council in 2011 and was reelected twice. Bethel musher Pete Kaiser is 77 miles from his first Iditarod Trail sled dog race victory. But first, he must hold off the race's defending champion, hungry for a repeat win. KNOM's Ben Matheson has more from the final major stop before mushers reach the finish line in Nome.
Church bells greeted Kaiser as he pulled into White Mountain just after 8 a.m. for a mandatory 8-hour break. For one last time during the race, Kaiser completes the checkpoint ritual of making straw beds, ripping off booties, and lighting a fire in his cooker to warm ice-cold water he pulled from the Fish River. Kaiser arrived 41 minutes ahead of Your Life, Seth Olsom, and he'll have to defend that gap overnight. The edge is not one that Kaiser is taking lightly. He said he could even see Life, Seth Olsom's headlamp at some points on the way into White Mountain, where he mushed through drifted snow and winds he estimated at 35 miles per hour. Kaiser says that trail across the hilly terrain provided a big workout.
I mean, it really depends how fast you want to go up the hills. You can stand on the runners and go very slow, or you can help them and go a little bit faster, but you're still going slow. So they're pretty relentless hills, definitely not what we're used to. So we get to do our one yearly annual hill training at the end of the Iditarod.
During some years, the run into Nome is a formality, but the sudden wind blasts from the famous blowhole, swirling ground storms, and wide open terrain make last-minute upheavals a real possibility. The Coast has already denied one race leader when Nick Petit's dog stalled on the sea ice between Shaktuluk and Koyuk, clearing the way for Kaiser and Life, Seth Olsom to battle for the win. The only two ways to make a move up to this point are to run fast or cut rest. Typically, mushers can have one, but not the other. Life, Seth Olsom rested 45 minutes less than Kaiser in Elam and left just 5 minutes after him. But Kaiser's dogs were moving fast, 36 minutes faster, over 46 miles to be exact, and he opened up the gap that he needs to arrive in Nome as the newest Iditarod champion. Kaiser was fastest on that last run, but he's careful to note that both teams have been showing bursts of speed over the last couple days.
We've kind of been flip-flopping with our teams. There's some runs his team's faster than mine. Sometimes I'm faster than his, so we'll see. But it's nice to have a little cushion. Doesn't mean anything, but it's nice to have that little thing, and we'll see how it plays out tomorrow, I guess.
Overnight, race fans will watch two athletic mushers who have been racing tightly since the Yukon River make one last push. Kaiser is not letting his guard down.
He never goes away, and I wouldn't have expected him to, so not surprised at all that we're sitting here together after several hundred miles of traveling together. But yeah, he's tough, and I mean, he's got just as good a shot at winning this as I do, so it'll be probably be fun for the fans tomorrow or today.
On the river in White Mountain, both mushers were exhausted and beginning to prepare for an extremely physical run to Nome. Life, Seth Olsom's strategy is simple.
Yeah, go as fast as I can.
Yeah, you give it all and hope it works out.
Kaiser was slated to leave Tuesday afternoon at 4:05, and Life, Seth Olsom could begin his run at 4:46. A finish is expected in Nome early Wednesday morning. For KNOM, I'm Ben Matheson in White Mountain.
And this just in, a record number of people signed up to testify over the future of the state's ferry system. Governor Michael Dunleavy's budget would eliminate the Alaska Marine Highway System after October 1st. Coastal Alaska's Jacob Resnick is reporting on that, more on that online. A common refrain was that the ferries are the only link for communities. The Senate Finance Committee has been grappling with the ferry question. House Transportation Committee is scheduled to resume taking public testimony at 1:30 p.m. Thursday. Taking a look at weather this afternoon, showers likely, cloudy with a high near 41. Southeast wind around 15 miles per hour.